Hi, I'm Jackie Tantillo, and this is Should Have Listened to My Mother.
If you talk to any parent, they'll tell you that raising a family definitely has its challenges. It's a big responsibility. As a parent, you always hope you get it right. You guide your child or children on what you hope is the right path, one that leads them to happiness. Many sleepless nights are part of the job, but having to raise a child as a single parent can be daunting, to say the least. Yet some find it exhilarating, others overwhelming. Based on the research that I've done on my guest, including what I've read and listened to regarding Wenzel McGowan, is that my guest has many interests. He's very talented, curious, and likes to think outside the box. He was raised by a single mom, and I imagine she instilled in him her life philosophies and aspirations for a happy life so he could become this talented and creative being that I'm just getting to know. Some of his interests include music, meditation, authenticity of self, and science, just to name a few. He's part of a TEDx Atlanta talk from 2015. He studied psychology, and he's an author. Wenzel is also a member and co-founder of the internationally touring band Moonhooch and inventor of the traffic cone saxophone. He even auditioned on America's Got Talent. Wenzel McGowan, it's a pleasure to have you on Should Have Listened to My Mother.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You got in touch with me and you said that your mom's love has helped you realize your dreams and live life to its fullest potential.
Yeah, I think I had a very special mom. My mom was is very dedicated to her art. And one of my earliest childhood memories is watching her paint. Even when I was, you know, half a year old, she would just strap me to her back and paint for hours. And her work ethic, her love for art, and also her commitment to being her authentic self has totally changed me. I mean, not changed me, made me who I am. And yeah, so I owe a lot to this wonderful woman.
And her name is?
Brooke McGowan.
And how did you refer to your mom when you were little? What did you call her?
I would just call her mom. I still call her mom.
And you were born overseas? Is that correct?
Yeah, I was born in Spain on the Canarian Islands.
Okay. And your parents American or?
No, my dad is from Austria and my mom is from Chicago. And they met in art school.
Oh, great.
In Vienna.
Nice. And where did you grow up?
Well, my parents were never really together. Like, they never really committed. My dad had a very complicated personality and life. So he was never really part of the family in that sense. But my mom moved around a lot with me, just traveling, trying to find a place where to raise me. As a child, I had a bad skin disease. And in German, it's neurodermitis. I think in English, it's eczema. And she found that whenever I go in the ocean, it would go away. So she wanted that I live close to the ocean. And that's why we ended up in Portugal in the end and lived there from when I was 9 years old or 10 years old till I was 18.
Wow. And so what languages do you speak?
My first language was German, then English, and then a little bit of Portuguese. But I went to a German school in Portugal, so I actually don't speak as much Portuguese as I wanted to.
So you, I'm sorry, then you went to, did you go to the New School of Music once you came to the
U.S.? Yeah, when I was 18, I got a scholarship to study music in Manhattan at the New School.
So your mom, it was just the two of you, or were there other family members around helping out, or? I think that sounds pretty great, being strapped on your mom's back or in the front of her and watching her create. That sounds pretty visionary.
She wanted to explore alternative living models. And that's why she linked up with my dad, because he wanted to create an art community where artists lived without money. And so they bought a property in Vienna and then created a big community that had their own gardens, their own schools, their own furniture companies, their own laboratories, and basically a mini society within society. And the whole idea was like, how can we be more focused on our connection to each other, on our art and our freedom of expression, and not be so stressed by money? And that worked for a while, but there was still a lot of people that then ended up working more than others, and it created tensions, and in the end, the whole thing fell apart after 2 decades. And then my mom split up and kind of we went just traveling. So my social surroundings was always changing. I was always in other groups and other communities, but the only thing consistent was my mom.
And that was comforting?
Yeah, I trust my mom, and I always trusted her. I mean, we had our issues. When I went through puberty, I think we had some difficulties, because we were living together in a small house, and when I would practice saxophone and she would paint, it sometimes wouldn't work out, because she would be like, I don't want you to play these high notes when I'm painting. And I was like, I have to practice high notes now. Like, and then she would go outside and then would be all upset at me, and you know. But I mean, we did our best to, you know, tolerate each other.
When you look back on what your childhood was like, what comes to mind? Was it crazy? Was it wild? Or was it just your normal?
I think it is crazy. I think it's crazy and wild if I think about what other kids' childhood is like, because it was just very unusual. But at the same time, if you live through something, that's all that becomes your reality. And so it seems normal.
Did you spend more time with adults than children?
No, actually not. I spent much more time with kids, because the community that we joined in Portugal, they had 9 kids. And so I spent actually most of my time, before I got into music, I spent most of my time just building tree houses and finding places in nature and building stone walls, trying to like learn the ancient techniques that people build stone walls in Portugal. In Portugal, there's lots of like very ancient architecture, just like, you know, from the Roman times. And so I would just study how people put rocks on top of rocks and used small rocks to hold big rocks in place. And I would kind of try to imitate that with my friends.
So thank goodness you weren't inside watching TV. Or on your cell phones.
Yeah, there was
which
no.
Which I think a lot of kids have lost out on a lot of imagination, and they've, you know, but that's a whole other conversation, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it was a blessing to have had such a profound connection with nature and play. I also remember always when I came home, totally covered in dirt. You know, there's sometimes Portugal would have these flash floods where just rains so much all of a sudden that there's just like these spontaneous rivers running everywhere.
That must have been fun, right?
Yeah, or it was really scary. Fun. We would just jump in with our clothes. I mean, it was both. It was sometimes the edge of dangerous, you know, because like if it rains a lot, some of these rivers get like quite intense. But then we would go try jump into them and see if we could ride the currents without hitting rocks. And
oh my gosh.
Sometimes hurt ourselves. But, you know, I would come home to my mom just covered in mud. And she would be like, all right, take your clothes off. I'm going to wash those. She would never like, she would never punish me for being my authentic self.
Wow, that's huge. That's such a gift.
That was one of the biggest gifts, actually, was that my mom recognized that I am a unique soul that needs to be supported on a unique path. I think every child is, but a lot of parents tend to try to fit their children into what they think is good. And I think my mom wanted me to have the freedom to decide for myself what I think is good and how I want to spend my life and how I want to spend my time. And she had this respect for me that I think not many people have for their kids. Well, she really respected my authenticity and supported it.
Do you have siblings?
I have 11 siblings for my dad. And I have one sibling for my mom. But I have no whole siblings.
And did you spend time together with all of these siblings? Or were you mainly off traveling with your mom and doing that?
Yes and no. I mean, I think who I ended up becoming much closer to was the children from the community in Portugal where we lived. Mm-hmm. My blood-related siblings were all dispersed throughout Europe, and some of them I got really close to, others I only met once or twice.
And are you still close with the children from Portugal?
Yes, I am, actually. We own a house together in Portugal, the house where we grew up. Like, when that community split up, the ownership of the house was so complicated that the community was like, you know what, we don't know how to divide this among ourselves, so we're just going to give it to the kids.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Yeah, but now that's we are all great. Like trying. Yeah, so it's pretty cool that we inherit this house, but it's also creating a lot of conflict now among us because we need to figure out. You know, I live in America, everyone lives in a different country in Europe, and the house is in Portugal, and like we all have different projects, so taking care of it isn't the easiest.
Right.
And at the same time, no one wants to sell it either because we're all like emotionally attached to the house.
Now
we,
you know why the adults time there. Did what they did, right? Like,
yeah.
They let you figure it out. And maybe you'll do the same thing to the next generation.
They passed on the problem. Yeah. Yeah.
And what role does your mom play in your life now?
Now our relationship, I think, is the best it ever has been. I think I went through a time in my life in puberty and afterwards where I judged her and where I, you know, thought she's weird or she is. Yeah, I just judged her. And I realized when I got older that she's such an authentic woman and it's such a wrong thing to judge your own mom. You know, I think I became pretty judgmental in puberty. And I think a lot of kids go through that where they kind of distance themselves from their parents and judge them and think their parents are weird or whatever.
Yes.
But I kind of saw how much pain that caused her and I feel really bad for it. And I really just actively put a lot of effort into repairing our relationship and supporting her in her art. And so now we talk, you know, often, and she's a best friend that I can talk about anything whenever. And she has always has my best interest at heart. And so it's a really good relationship.
Where does she live? In the US? Or?
She lives in Northern California.
Okay. So why was it, and I totally understand and can relate to, I have two boys and, you know, teenage years are tough, but was there many things that you were resentful for, or do you even remember what, I mean, was she just too out of the box for you, or you wanted more strict guidance, or?
You know, I think it was actually my own disconnection with my own heart was the problem. And that's easy to say now. It's much harder to say that when you're in it. But I felt like that I was so focused on myself. I was so focused on practicing the saxophone and achieving a music career, succeeding in my music career, that I just didn't really pay enough attention to love and relationship. And I think that nurturing any relationship, you have to put attention into it. And that, you know, no one should take their mom's love for granted. And yeah, and I think I was just kind of stuck in my own head and so self-obsessed that I didn't have much time or balance to appreciate.
Yeah, you know, in a perfect world, it would be great if teenagers were maybe more aware, but I don't think that they should be responsible for getting involved with parental responsibilities.
Right.
Throwing guilt into the mix just makes everything more complicated. They're still trying to figure out who they are.
Right.
How did your mom lead you or persuade you to try something new or discuss new things? Or did she just let you be and you would find your way?
Yeah, she would never, ever interfere with my path. But I was also extremely driven. So, like, I was the one who decided to practice 8 hours a day, saxophone a day. And she was never like, you should be playing more saxophone. She was more like, there when I needed help. For example, when I was 16, I just had this vision that I need to move to America on my own and pursue a music career. Which was kind of crazy for someone living in the middle of nowhere in Portugal. But she was like, okay, we'll make that happen if that's what you want to do. And so she helped me study English, and she helped me prepare myself for an American high school. And she was there like when I needed her. She helped me with my essays. And at the time, yeah, I didn't really see what went into that. But, you know, she was always a caring role. She was not so much about deciding what path I will take.
How old were you when you decided to pick up the sax?
I was 10.
Where did you get that idea?
she brought her father's saxophone to me. Like, when her father passed away, she gave me his saxophone. And for a time I didn't play it, but then my brothers started playing saxophone. I mean, started playing music. One of my brothers plays guitar and the other one plays piano. And at that point I was like, oh, maybe I should join them and play saxophone. Yeah.
And she is not a musician. She's an artist, your mom.
She's an artist, yeah. And she did once when I started playing saxophone, she did tell me I had no talent.
Well, it's kind of a hard instrument. I mean, not that all instruments are hard, but
I actually had no musical talent though. I was tone deaf when I started music. I couldn't sing back a note or couldn't tell if I was singing the right or the wrong note. I had no sense of rhythm either, so I literally was starting from square one. And she saw how talented I was as an artist. I was drawing photorealistic paintings by the time I was 10 years old. And so she was like, yeah, maybe you should stick to art. I mean, this is comes so easy to you while music does come so hard to you. And I told her, for some reason, I love when people doubt me. It makes me want to prove myself. So I was like, okay, I'll just have to play more saxophone and show her that I can learn it.
Wow.
And then after a couple of months, she was like, okay, I guess he's doing it. And then she was like, oh, I guess it makes sense. She told me that she had no talent in art when she started and that music came very easily to her. She was a great singer and flautist, but she thought it was too easy, and that's why she wanted to go with art.
So her musical career, it wasn't
That was no challenge. She
moved on to greener pastures. So you two seem very much alike.
Yeah, it seems that way, that, you know, we like to challenge ourselves. And yeah,
if you didn't do music and you weren't art, what would be a third direction your life would have gone in, do you think?
I think it's the direction I'm going now, which is, you know, meditation teacher, author, and just consciousness explorer, philosopher, you know, that kind of thing really excites me a lot.
Yeah, there's an interesting story, and I guess you can talk about it, I guess, with your bandmate, Michael. From Moon Hooch, did you two not get along at all, and then you both wound up taking psychology classes to understand your relationship?
Yeah, I mean, we...
That's a long way to go to see if two people want to be friends. That's pretty great.
Yeah, like our band became very successful before we even know each other very well, because we just had such performance chemistry together. But we both are very like alpha type leader personalities, and so we couldn't really agree on leading the band and started just not getting along at all and having lots of fights. But at some point I had this vision where it's like, you know what? If we can't work out our differences, how do I expect, you know, humanity to not have wars? I always have this hope that humans get their shit together and start collaborating and working out the differences. And, you know, it's like sometimes like an idealistic vision. But at this point, when I was starting to have so many conflicts with my bandmate, I was like, look, I don't have my stuff together myself. I need to, if I want to like change the world or like hope for a better future, I need to change myself. And then, yeah, we started studying psychology, reading books to each other and going to therapy, meditating.
This is many years back.
It's like 11 years old, our relationship. We still do therapy together though. And just to maintain the relationship, just to like not let, you know, unconscious baggage accumulate.
Yeah, very important. But you and your mom didn't have that same kind of butting of heads.
Well, I'm sure if we like had to like run a band together, I'm sure we would have our issues. I mean, I think it's just
good for you.
The closer your relationship gets with someone, the more potential for issues, right? You have a constant dependency on communicating with each other. Right, you know, it's like, when are we leaving? We're meeting here and there. Someone is late, then someone is upset. And, you know, these little things just add up. And if they're not, if people don't take ownership over their actions, then it poisons the relationship. I mean, that's it's kind of like that. If people don't acknowledge, hey, I'm sorry I'm late, or I'm sorry I didn't listen to your feelings, but just play over it and neglect it, now the other person will keep resentment. Even if they forget about it in that moment, somewhere that resentment will then burst back up later and comes out unexplained, and then people start fighting over it. So I feel like the closer your relationship, the more potential you have for these unconscious misunderstandings to accumulate.
In any relationship.
In any relationship, yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, if you're married to someone, then that's where it's going to be happening. Sure. Or if you're...
Friends or bandmates.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think those relationships are actually huge opportunities for growth. Because
always,
this is where you get... Yes. This is where you get the most intense mirrors. Someone reflecting back to you your actions. And all of us have unconscious spots, like where we don't see how our actions are affecting others or ourselves. And all of us have these stories or ways to keep our blind spots away from being witnessed. But if we have someone that's very close to us, that person is going to witness our blind spots and going to point them out. And that's not going to be pleasant.
Did your mom, does she keep you on your toes that way? She's honest with you?
Yes. I mean, we haven't had any issues in years, so I don't really...
Knock on wood, as they say. That's great.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have any.
That's wonderful.
Like, I think the last argument I had with my mom was probably over 10 years ago.
Hallelujah. So she did great. She's a phenomenal mother.
Yeah, she's a phenomenal mother and phenomenal person and phenomenal artist. And unfortunately, now she's also starting to have more recognition. She's starting to have exhibits in New York and LA. And yeah, I think her art has, it shows her character. Because she goes into like deep trance states when she makes art, and just she like has this relationship with paint almost. It's very interesting. She explains to me her philosophy about painting, and it almost reminds me how she raised me. She tells me that when she paints, she respects that the paint has their own will, and she also doesn't use brushes but pours paint on the canvas. And so, yes, the paint really does do a lot of things that the artist doesn't expect. Because, you know, she's not using it in a very controlled way. But she is, like, playing with that boundary of losing control over the paint, but also respecting the paint's freedom to add to the painting in a spontaneous way.
Oh, I can't wait to see her work. Brooke McGowan. Brooke with an E, and then McGowan, it's McGowen. So I definitely would like to see her work, because there's many artists in my family as well. We're getting short on time, Wenzel, so I want to talk about all of your let alone your traffic cone saxophone, which is probably something from so much of your past. But you also auditioned for America's Got Talent. You're now an author. You're really delving into more spiritual or philosophical period in your life. What books would you like to mention, or projects, something that's at the top of the list in the last few minutes that we have?
I'm just releasing a board game. It's actually already available on Amazon. It's a board game about conscious relating that you can play with your family and your friends or whoever. And it's an opportunity to have more honest conversations or have difficult conversations. And it's basically a game where players fall into emotional spirals. So a player might get stuck in arrogance or self-doubt or anxiety or hopelessness. And then they share about that emotion while others try to help them get out.
It's really great. I saw the video for you. It's a YouTube video, right? And you move, you throw the die and you move around, and it's absolutely brilliant. Oh my gosh. Yeah, unless people are too afraid to actually reveal their truths, you know?
It's, you know, really so far great. I found it really works in most settings. I've literally played this with my aunt and my uncle, and we had great conversations. And, you know, even my uncle was suddenly talking about things that my aunt had never heard before.
I bet.
Although they've been married for over 20 years.
Yeah, but it's that you're the gatekeeper and you just open the gate. It's kind of driving with your kids in a car and they can't get out. You know, those uncomfortable conversations. Right. But this is in a more fun setting. But wait, tell us the name of the game again.
It's called Non-Physical, and you can find it when you go to wenzelmcgowan.org, wenzelmcgowan.org.
Okay, and Wenzel is spelled W-E-N-Z-L, Wenzel McGowan.
Yeah, W-E-N-Z-L-M-C-G-O-W-E-N.org. Mm-hmm. And there's also my books, The End of Fear, which is a novel about a homeless person having spiritual awakenings and not being sure if it's a mystical experience or if he's going crazy. And then I also have another book called The Sequence of Latent Truth, which is a research book about what scientists think about mystical experiences and what are the philosophical or intellectual frameworks we can use in order to make sense of mystical experiences.
And your website, do you have a website where people can go to find this?
Yeah, wenzelmcgowan.org.
Okay.
Same website.
Okay. Same website. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we got an opportunity to speak. This has been really wonderful.
Likewise. I enjoyed it.
I can't wait to meet you and your mom.
Awesome.
That would be really, really great. And best of luck. And I'll keep an eye out on any upcoming works that you have. And I'll be sure to share it with my listeners.
Sounds good.
And I'll be back next week with another episode of Should Have Listened to My Mother.